ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello, and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I had Soccer Dave and Ismael. These two sat down and gave me about 2 hours and 45 minutes of their time. I've broken this down to two episodes, about an hour long each. And these two shared so much knowledge with me over these next two episodes. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My legal name is David Balliot. I go by Soccer Dave now, which by default, a lot of people call me Dave. I have teammates and soccer coaches now that don't even know my name is David, and I'm totally okay with that. I am from Dallas, Texas, born. Grew up in Buenos Aires, Argentina. My family moved to Buenos Aires when I was 6 years old to become missionaries through the evangelical church. And so from a very early age, I just kind of had the example from family, from parents of what it meant to believe in God, not just believe in him, but, you know, follow him at the cost of completely leaving, you know, where you're comfortable and going to a new place, new country, and starting a new life, just simply because you believe God said so. And so that the reason why I mentioned that is God plays a huge role in the rest of my life. I went on to fall in love with that little round toy, is what I call it, the soccer ball. And that love for that round toy took me to places that I could have never imagined on my own. I was able to at the age of 18, make my pro debut in Bolivia in the second division. Played there two seasons. Coming out of that, ended up going back to college. Played at Dallas Baptist University and Mississippi College, where at both locations I was an all-conference, all-American player. And I was just very, very blessed and fortunate that I took my skills and the talents that God had given me serious and continued to pursue it to the best of my ability. And that led to, you know, certain opportunities that I'm sure we'll get into. And but focusing too much on it and not on other things actually kept me and hindered me from other opportunities. And so I'd love to at some point get into that as well, how it can be such a blessing, but it can also, you know, hold you and keep you from many blessings if you give too much to it internally. I think externally we should always give our best, but internally there has to be a balance in our mind and in our hearts in order to best give what we can externally. But now currently I'm 32 years old. I'm still playing at a high competitive level. I just got done with a USL2 season where I didn't even know you could be over 30 and play in that league, which was fun for me to play in and compete. And 32 years old, I've been married 8 years. I have two beautiful daughters, 1 6, 1 3. And I posted on Instagram last week, Dave, you do a lot. What exactly do you do? And the truth is, the answer is I just do my best in everything that I do. That's it. I don't really know half the time what I'm going to do, but I know that I can give my best and I know that I can continue to press in with the people around me, the places that I'm at, places that I go with the talents that I have. And it's pretty much how I keep life as simple as possible through all of its complications.
Love it. Now, Ishmael, I'm not going to butcher your name probably for the first 15 times.
Yeah, right, you can say Ishmael. Yeah, no worries. My name is Ismael in Spanish, but everybody, you can call me Ishmael. If you read or watched the movie Moby Dick, they say it like that. So you can call me Ishmael. I'm 38 years old. I'm originally from Venezuela. Moved to Florida in 2014, the year that my son was born. We moved to Texas in 2019, and he never played soccer until probably the pandemic times, when he was so bored at home that I decided to buy him a soccer ball so he could spend some time at home just trying to burn some calories when, you know, we were in the lockdowns and not having anything to do outside. Moved to Dallas 2022, and I've been here. I met Dave probably 3 years ago, Dave, more or less.
Yeah, right around there.
And I definitely will share more about that experience of meeting Dave when we move along on the podcast. So that's me.
Sounds good. Thank you. So, David, when did your soccer journey begin for you?
Yeah, so my soccer journey, my dad was a collegiate coach at Dallas Baptist University, actually, when I was born. I was literally, my parents were dorm directors when I was born. So I was born in the hospital and taken to the dorms at Dallas Baptist University. And so that's, it pretty much all started when I, as soon as I was able to be either in my dad's arms while he was on the field coaching, I was there. When I started to walk, there's a picture of me standing right next to my dad. He's got a foot on a ball. I have my little 1.5-year-old foot on a ball standing right next to him while these college players were playing or training or whatever. You know, that's why I call it the little round toy. It's pretty much always been at my foot since I can remember. Like I said, when I was 6 years old, we moved to Argentina, to Buenos Aires, where the love and passion is probably the more correct word. Passion for the game is very evident in pretty much every child, every kid, every adult as well, which just bleeds into the kids as well. And so that's really where I learned to have a passion and a love for not just playing, but understanding that I'm supposed to put my heart and soul and everything into this thing. You know, you can score goals, you can celebrate, you can go in hard into tackles. It's all a part of it, you know, and it's beautiful. And when it all comes together and your favorite team scores a goal, you can scream it at the top of your lungs And there's nothing greater than screaming goal after you score, after your team scores. And so just all that passion, you know, just came about. My skills also began to grow, and I gave everything that I had, you know, through the love. One of the things that I talk about is if you can fall in love with the game, you can endure the sport. Because I do believe that the game and the sport are two different things. And so as I transitioned, I became older. You start transitioning away from kind of the game of soccer into the sport where you have to win. There's a little bit more pressure to win. You start separating yourself as a player from those around you. Who's going to make it? Who's going to get called up to the U15, to the U16, to the U17? You know, that's really where things got a little bit interesting for me, because we ended up coming back from Argentina, back to the Dallas area. I went to high school in Mesquite at Poteet High School from 2005 to 2009. My senior year, I was an all-state player. We won the regionals. We lost in the state finals. I had zero scholarships offers to any school anywhere. I could walk on at Howard Payne, and that was pretty much about it. Maybe UTD, I can't remember others, but that's about the extent that I had. But I knew I could play. I knew I could play. I knew I was being overlooked. I was very, very skinny back then. I ran kind of funky, didn't look athletic. And to the eye test, you know, especially here in the United States, that eye test is a big one. I just didn't pass it. And so I just got overlooked. But that's when I took my chances. I said, you know what, I can still ball. I was just in Argentina less than 4 years ago. I'm going to go back. And so I went back and I trained with Gimnasia de La Plata. I was able to get in there, became a training player. And then before signing with the U19s, the swine flu hit. And so it was kind of like the first mini pandemic. And so the entire country shut down. There were two players left that we were supposed to sign that we didn't. So we got welcomed back to train again, just to be training players. And so I did that for a little bit longer, another couple months. And you go from U19s to U22s is how it works over there. I'm pretty sure everywhere in the world. And then from there, you basically are a contract player with the reserves or with the first team. And so out of the roster of 18, 13 or 14 got cut. Only four moved up because it's three age groups being combined. And so then I came back home. I actually worked for a semester, then went to Mississippi College for one semester, played there, became an all-conference player, all-American there. And then when I found out, this is funny, when I found out that there wasn't going to be a spring season, that there's only fall, and in the spring you like just kind of train and go to school, I was like, okay, well, I think I have a contact in Bolivia, so I'm going to go over there where I can play. So I ended up getting my college degree. I do have a college degree, but at the time I was 18, 19, and I was like, I have to go to school and not play? Yeah, that's not going to work. So I went to Bolivia, took my talents over there, tried it out, was able to make a team. My contract got bought out at the end of the season, so I played another season for another team in the same division, second division there in Santa Cruz. And then I came home. Some things happened with my contract. Some things I'm not proud of. I was an extremely arrogant 19, 20 year old that thought that the world belonged to me, and it doesn't, and it never did, and it never will. And so that resulted in my contract being taken away from me, and I had to come back home. So I came back home, battled with the NCAA a little bit out there, sent a couple letters. They gave me my eligibility. They gave me three more years to play, which was more than gracious. I thought I was going to get one, maybe two. They gave me the remaining three that I had after playing one at Mississippi College. And I played at Dallas Baptist and all 3 years. And then during that time, once I graduated, did NPSL, USL, just the whole thing. I met my wife in college, so I got married. So other priorities started kind of popping up. You know, it's not just me, myself, and I. I can't just rush off to Bolivia again, like I did when I was single. You know, I'm married now. So priorities just changed. And then fast forward the first 3 years of my marriage, maybe take a contract here, maybe not. We're not really sure what to do, but I always still wanted to play. And then, I ended up I stopped playing for about 2 years and then wanted to get back into it, got back into it, and ended up playing in Spain. An old coach, old agent called me and said, it's actually an old coach, Armando Peláez, who's in charge of Keaton Parks, who plays at NYFC and debuted on our national team. He's the one that helped me go to Spain. And he said, I can get you there, but the rest is on you. And well, the rest was on me. I made it, played a little bit out there, took my wife out there, my 1-year-old at the time. And we were able to kind of live in Spain till my visa expired for about 4 months. So not long, but hey, I did it. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment in my life, childhood dream to play in Europe. And I got to accomplish it. And so yeah, very proud moment for myself and my family, and it was a fun time. And then that was in 2019. We came back summer of 2019, and then that was pretty much it as far as pro accolades, high level football, up until this past season with USL2.
So you mentioned back when you were playing, you kind of just, when you moved to, your passion grew when you moved to Argentina. Mm-hmm. So is that just because the soccer culture there you feel, or is it because of the culmination of things, the having to emerge into a culture and learning to be one of the kids in the neighborhood and just having to have the ball at your feet all the time to go play? It's like video games today. If you don't play video games today, you're kind of an outcast. Yeah. But you have the ball at your foot all the time. Is that kind of how you grew to have the passion then at the young age of 6? And when did you realize you had the passion for the game?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the passion probably initially is just from seeing it all around you. I became a Boca Juniors fan, and Boca Juniors is known for having just an amazing, amazing fan base, very passionate. And so we talked about the games. I mean, I was 7, 8, 9 years old going to school, and everybody knew what happened, who scored this, that. And I mean, even if you didn't watch the game, they were like, you didn't watch it. So you're not a part of this conversation, So you had to kind of know what was going on in order to keep up. And then it was just the icing on cake if you could play also and back it up at recess. Right. I mean, it's, you show up to school and you have the jersey of your favorite player, if you can afford it, if you have it, and it's on your back. And so at recess, you're that guy, right? Like I was Riquelme or Tevez, at recess. And that's who I wanted to be. That's who I wanted to play like. And so you watch them on TV, you watch them at the stadium, you feel their presence because of everything around you. And it's hard to describe, but sometimes I'll talk about it. I'll get goosebumps because it's just in me, it's inside since I was little. And so definitely the environment, I would say the environment put that there. Now, I don't know if you or the listeners have ever heard about Kobe talking about when he moved to Italy, when his dad went to go play in Italy. And Kobe talks about how he just kind of needed something to do. He was already in a new place, had to learn a new language. And so he needed, in a way, a little escape, just kind of be on his own. Because your brain, I would go to school, story has it, I would go to school and I would run out of about my second period class every day. I could endure the first one. By the second one, I'm over it. I'm running out of class. They're having to chase me down somewhere in the school, in the hallways, whatever, and get me back to class. And the only way I would come back is they would have to find the English teacher, wherever the heck she was, whatever class she was teaching, so that she could talk to me in English so that I could understand. And it would just calm my anxiety down. And I would go back to class. They'd get me some headphones and I'd play music in English. And that would calm me down until I felt like I could take them off and endure another hour or two or whatever, right, of a new strange place, and it was a strange language that I had to learn. And so what was there? What was constant, right? Soccer. Soccer was there. Soccer was constant. Soccer was something that maybe I didn't understand it all fully then and there, but it was something familiar that I could continue to grow and continue to understand. There's another story, you know, we fast forward till I'm in middle school. A lot of people don't know this, and I honestly don't talk about it a lot. I probably should more, just because it's a big thing going on, is I got bullied a lot. And when I say bullied, I don't mean cyber bullied, because there was no phones or internet or anything like that. And I don't mean like, you know, picked on, whatever. I mean, I was the kid, the super small kid that would get picked up and smashed into lockers and then dropped, right? Like that type of bullying. I endured that, you know, that thing at 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And there was one time, I'll never forget this. I had, you know, this is, you know, we're fast forwarding from when I was 6. Like I told you, I was running out of class, to now I'm 11. And the bully, you know, he said, give me one reason why I shouldn't just smash your face right now into this locker. And the only thing I confidently, right there, how can you be confident in a situation like that? And confidently I said, because if we go outside right now with a soccer ball, I'll meg you. That was my 11-year-old, 10-year-old response to the guy that was about to smash my face. And so just looking back, understanding back that story, in the time I didn't get it, but now I get it. If you can establish some type of skill, if we can get kids and help them understand, hey, you have a skill, you have a talent, that's where they're going to find a little bit of confidence. And then that confidence bleeds in outside of that, because you've been able to accomplish something. So if by the age of 10, 11, I can juggle to 10, 20, 30, I can score goals. My peers, you know, I'm good at something that my peers value, you know, it just so happens, you know, soccer in Argentina, but now I have a level of confidence that if it doesn't pertain to that, it doesn't matter. So you're a bully, you're about to smash my face. Does that have anything to do with soccer? No, then it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant to where I see myself and where I'm going. Right. And so, you know, it just became a lifeline. It became, I know for a fact, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I'm going to do something. I'm going to pursue pro ball. I'm going to do something with this soccer ball, and it's going to be a part of my life forever. And
yeah. And Dave, if you let me expand a little bit more into Ian's question, because I think that this is very important to point out. I'll try to ask the same question, but in a different way. How important do you think it was your stay in Argentina to create Soccer Dave, to create you? I mean, how important was the culture over there? You've been, you were born here, you've been here probably half of your life, if not more, and you've seen different scenarios, different people, different attitudes around soccer. So how do you think that being in Argentina actually gave you the motivation to go to soccer? Or if it was not Argentina, I mean, what do you think that was the breaking point when you were traveling around?
So how important was the environment that Argentina gave me to become not just who I am, but for the journey?
Correct.
I think when you see how something or how someone through something can be that massive of a difference, or can make that massive of a difference, I think that that is somewhere inside of me was forming as the perspective of, if I have a ball, if I'm good enough with this ball, then I have influence, right? Because in a world where that ball is everything, if you're good with it, you have influence. If you accomplish something with it, you have influence. And even if you're not good with it, right? Who's got the neighborhood soccer ball? Where are they? Right? Because we all want to play, right? So if there's one kid in the neighborhood that has the ball, that kid, he's everybody's friend, right? And so I think, I don't know that I'm answering your question maybe how you want it, or maybe I didn't understand it, but I think now, so if I were to go now, Soccer Dave understands that it's not even me. Like, yes, I have a lot to offer, a lot of perspective, a lot of words, you know, I've lived a lot, so I can offer, you know, different wisdom in different areas. But really the biggest thing that I have in my title, in my Instagram bio, my Facebook bio, it says what I do. I'm spreading joy and happiness with a ball at my feet, right? I'm not just doing it with my words I'm doing it with a ball, because that ball speaks every language this world speaks. That ball brings out smiles in any culture, under any circumstance, in poverty, in richness, in depression, in joy, in whatever it is. You bring that ball out and start to play. There's a reason there's a whole trend on TikTok and Instagram, like, you know, of the audio going, and then you step on a soccer field and everything goes away and it's silent and you can just clear your head and play. Right. And so I think understanding from a young age and being in the environment that showed this ball can change a life, this toy can change a life. And then you add value and character by being who you are, that then it's even more, right? Because it's not just the ball now, it's a person with influence, with the ball that already has influence. We did a we did an outreach here in Houston through a there's a ministry out here. I'm trying to remember the exact name of it, but anyway, there's an Afghan refugee apartment complex, bunch of Afghans that had just gotten here, and none of them spoke English. None of them knew what the heck they were doing. They were all in a new country. They were just dropped off on buses at this apartment complex, and this is where they're gonna live probably forever. And so they were like, hey, let's do something. So they called me, said, hey, can you come out? You know, we're not really sure what's going to happen, you know, but they're from a part of the world. They probably like soccer. So if we bring soccer day, like, let's bring them out. Let's just see what happens. So they made meals. They did food and certain activities and stuff, but it was hard to communicate, whatever. So when I got there, they weren't really sure what was going to happen. When I got there, the lady that was kind of coordinating everything, she said, hey, I'm really sorry. You know, this is kind of turned into, we're not really sure what to do because we can't talk with any of them. So like they see the food, we kind of hand motion, you know, and, but we can't talk, we can't do anything. So I'm not really sure how it's going to go for you. And I said, for me, I said, this is going to go nice because I have a ball and a smile.
Right. It's the universal language.
Yeah, like that's its own language. And, you know, within 5 minutes, I was juggling with some of these guys. We were trying to meg each other when they weren't looking. You know, we got a little 3-on-3 going. You know, it just transcends. And I grew up, I just happened to play and grow up in a place where that's not something you have to learn. It's just something that is. And so I think Ismael, maybe what he was trying to get at is like some of those intangibles that some people would consider intangibles and like wows here in the US, I just am. It's just a part of me. And I'm so blessed. I don't take it for granted. And I constantly try to add more value to it through either the spiritual side or the values, character, positivity. You know, I think there's a lot, you know, I try to do some reading and stay on point with different either current events, players struggling with mental health or whatever the heck it is. How can I speak into that? How can I elaborate into that? Players struggling with confidence. How can I speak into that? Because that's just who I am. I feel it like a calling, you know, to just help, to just spread joy and happiness with a ball at my feet, with a language that we can all speak and understand and revere and respect, common ground, right? Common ground is, I think, the first stepping point to any type of relationship, or any type of difference for that matter. And I have that through the ball and I understand that. And that's, I would say that growing up over there and creating that relationship with that round toy has been detrimental and very evident and very important to becoming who I am today.
That answers the question about passion, because it grows at a young age. The culture was there for you to build upon, and then it just kind of became, not to be sounding weird, but like a third arm for you of, so to speak, in life, or a third branch of your brain, whatever you want to talk about it. It took up a whole quartile, if you want to say, of your mind, and that just allows you to communicate, which is so critical. Was there a true struggle with the game, or did it come naturally to you as a player? Because from watching your videos, watching what you've post on Instagram and on social media, you make it look easy. And I know that nothing's ever easy. No one, Messi and Ronaldo didn't just pick up a ball one day and just were blessed playing. They had natural talent that they fostered and loved. Did the game come naturally? Was it a struggle for you ever? Did he go through phases like?
It's so I'll try to answer, and then I'll just give a bunch of scenarios that I remember from growing up. So I mentioned earlier, the more love you have for the game, the more you can endure the sport. But you have to understand, the game to each kid is interpreted different, right? Like when we, like, let's just take a game like Uno, right? I may love the reverse. You may love the draw four. Some other kid may love the draw two. My favorite color is green. Like you got to get into a kid's head, right? Like, oh, there's some ants on the ground. Oh, look at that green grass over there. It's brown. Like whatever, right? Like whatever entertains them, right? It still plays into the game. Like Kobe talked about, just smelling the leather on the basketball, like, you know, how the ball bounces. Like every kid is interpreting their version of the game while we are pressuring them to play the sport. Right. But so that's kind of a separate topic, but I'm going to get into, no, nothing was easy for me. Yes, I had moments of wanting to quit. I had moments that I did quit. My dad allowed me to. When I was seven, my dad was at the World Cup in 98 in France. He went to France. He calls me. He says, "What jersey do you want? I'll bring you one back." I said, "I don't want anything to do with soccer. I'm done." I was training at Estudiantes. I'm 7 years old, training at Estudiantes. I think I went to training one time. Everything was overwhelming. The coach was yelling a lot. I was getting bit by a lot of mosquitoes. I was over it, right? This is stupid, right? I'm not doing this ever again. That lasted, what, 4 months, okay? Then found another place to train. It was indoors. It was nice, cool. Coaches were nice, awesome. Start blooming. I start understanding. Then I start playing futsal. I'm a key player. Let's say I'm nine. Okay. So like your son. Okay. And, I'm eight or nine and I'm good at this point. I had been training, I'm blooming, I'm a good, decent player. And on the futsal team, we play in a game and I scored or I assisted, we started winning. We're up 2-0. I start get fouling a lot. I start getting fouled a lot. And, you know, South American kids, you know, we see videos viral. There's kids that understand what slide tackling is and elbowing somebody because they go to the games on Sunday and they see the grown men do it. So they emulate, right? So I start getting hit and kicked and I'm falling on concrete, right? I just mentioned futsal. So I'm falling on concrete. Oh, that hurt. My dad's yelling from the stands, "Dude, don't just come out the game." So I sub out. They score two goals. "Coach, I'm ready. I'll go back in. My elbow is fine. My hip is fine. It's okay. I can go back in." Go back in. We go up 3-2. They kick me again. I fall down. "Ow, that hurt. Sub. I need time to recover." I sub out. They go up 4-3. "Okay, I can go back in." I go back in. We run out of time. We lose 4-3. Okay. What's the life lesson there? Well, it was simple. I have to stay on the field if we're going to win games, right? But I wasn't told that. I wasn't yelled that. Let a kid be a kid. He's hurt. You want to come off? Come off. You're going to learn by default that you shouldn't come off, you know? And so that was another story, right? And by the way, the entire ride home, I was quiet, silent, and I was furious that we lost. And through conversation with my dad, you know, I'm sure it was probably heated, you know, I am a 9-year-old, so 9, 10-year-old, whatever I was, but it became evident to me, right? It became self-evident to me that I should have stayed on. I could have endured that pain. I could have. I chose not to. And we lost. That day, I decided I am never, ever, 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 ever again in my entire life going to ask for a sub. And since that day, I have never asked for a sub, ever. I've never asked to be subbed off. If the coach sees I need to be subbed off, make a big boy grown decision. You're the coach. Sub me off. I'm not going to ask for it. Right? And that was a lesson that I learned at nine. Nobody told me. Nobody yelled at me. Nobody scolded me. Nobody said we lost because it's your fault. I learned that on my own. Self-evident. And I think that we can allow kids to grow through circumstance, right? Same when we grew through circumstance. I mean, let's just be honest. When we were all kids, it was a different era. Mom and dad weren't with us all the time. Matter of fact, grown-ups weren't with us all the time. Things just became self-evident through trial and error and through a mistake and a scar and a this. I probably shouldn't do that anymore. And you don't do it anymore. Or, oh, wow, that worked. I should probably do that more. And so you do it more, you know? And so that's how you learn. Nowadays, dude, a kid can't go 5 minutes without somebody, without an adult telling him something.
Dave, and that's something that I was telling him before we started to talk about your soccer journey. And I was telling him that that's the whole purpose, that why our kids, or we put our kids into any given sport. And in this case, since we are on a soccer podcast, we're going to call it, it's a football, a soccer sport. But that's probably the main purpose. And sometimes we forget, and we forget that they are 7, 8, 9 years old. And the reality is that sometimes kids will use the sport to just learn about things that you probably cannot learn at school, how to be a team player, how to be and overcome those frustrations, how to win, how to accept defeat, and how to come back if you're not doing well. And I was discussing with Ian, because this is, I think, that where it's probably the most complex situation with children. Sometimes it's hard to understand that you can still push through the limits without burning out a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You can still allow them to play the game, to get in love with the game without burning them out, and pushing them through the limits that they have, make them hustle without, you know, pushing that hustle because we are trying to get that out of themselves. I think that that's something that we forget, that that's probably one of the main purposes why we are supporting our kids, why we are having our children go to practice every day, why we spend 4, 5, 6 hours on a weekend taking them to soccer games. And that love for the game is not going to grow if we don't understand that in the end it's their journey. It's the way they see that. And our responsibility as parents is just to make sure that we guide them through the process. We all want different things, as you are saying. I do think that we do have the capability to mold those ideas into the children. And that's why we as parents have a responsibility. Our kids will see through our eyes. They will see whatever we want them to try to see, at least when they are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And that's when you try to connect them with people that you believe are going to be special in their journey. And Soccer Dave, in my case, at least I can say that there was that missing part that we were not having in the soccer journey.
You're right. I call it the golden years. That's how I've been taught. It's from the ages of anything below U14. U14 and younger is the golden years. And whatever we start teaching them then will stick with them for the rest of their life with this sport. And as parents, this is where I know I struggle. It's remembering that they're kids and they're still learning. They're still learning the process. And as my biggest frustration with my son is for him to go play this beautiful game, and all we ask is for him to leave every ounce of energy he has on the pitch when he's done. That's all we expect. We don't care if he wins, he loses. Today, it's like I showed him your videos the other day, and all he's been trying to do for 2 days now is trying to mimic your double around the world. I'm not even joking.
Beautiful.
And this is the thing. It's like when he was, I'm going back, 2 years, 2.5 years, he was challenged. You might know the name Segu. Xavier,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was challenged by Segu to go learn to do a rainbow and do it in a game. This kid spent 2 hours a day above and beyond practice every day, and to do a rainbow in a game. We get to the next Saturday, guess what he did in the game?
Rainbow.
And go around the player at 7 years old, 6 years old.
Beautiful, beautiful. To where if you want that effort, right, on every play, then you have to kind of like get into a kid's mind and make them like in a way see the game within the game, right? Because like I said, every kid interprets the game different. So if you can find their little game, the way they're interpreting it, and then give them a way to win that game, then you can get the best that you want them in the other, you know, we're adults, we're thinking outside, right? Like, but we got to get right. The little kid, we got to poke the little right button in the kid, you know, to get them to do what we want them to do. But you can't go high level, like, hey, I need you to press and give everything you have. Well, everything he has might be trying to do the rainbow. So the entire game he's dissecting, when can I do the rainbow? Right? Like, I'm giving everything I have, Dad. I promise I gave everything I had. Okay, but what were you focused on? Well, I was focused on doing the rainbow. I give everything. Oh my God, dude, I wasn't even talking about that. Right? Like, how many conversations do we have our kids? And it's like, I'm not even talking about that. But to them, right, that's how they interpreted it.
Right.
And so we kind of have to figure out their language. And this is where I think a lot of coaches miss it, and where I've been blessed to try to continue to grow. I'm not perfect by any means, but I try to just, I think it's my content. When I'm on a field with 7 or 10 7-year-olds, I'm the biggest kid there. I'm 6. If there's 10 7-year-olds in me, I'm the 6-year-old. Right? Like, it doesn't do them any good to have an adult there. Like, we're kids playing. Now, because I'm an adult, I can show you a quote unquote, right, a 6-year-old playing better than you, having more fun than you, winning more than you. Right? But I'm doing it like a 6-year-old. I'm not doing it like an adult. Kids don't care for adults. Right. That's why.
And I would speak to my son, Dave. Yeah. And I would speak for my son on that, because that's one thing that at least we went through with Dave. And my son started to just want to practice with Dave. And it was because that connection that Dave created with the kids into, yes, we're going to practice here. We're going to do our best. We're going to discover new tricks. We're going to push your skills out, but we can do that having fun. And the growth that my son had when he started practicing and doing activities with Dave was probably the biggest jump that he did into his game. I never remember Dave. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I never remember you yelling at a kid that they were doing something wrong, that they needed to do something perfect. No, it was always to a level where Dave was basically another kid that probably, you know, had better skills than them, but they were showing them the way to do things. And I think that part, at least for Noah, was a really life-changing experience for him when it comes to soccer.
Kids watch kids. I learned this from a good friend of mine, Garrett Johnson, who played also in D1, played in England, and then he ran a really good training facility in Dallas. He doesn't anymore, but I worked with him for a while, and he taught me something that it just stuck with me, and it's so true. Kids watch kids. So if you want the kid to watch you, become a kid.
But
the thing is, you're an adult. I'm not a kid. I'm an adult. So I can also, in a way, use the fact that I can become a kid, but with an adult mind, to show you that a kid can also pay attention. Because the 7-year-old isn't paying attention. But if I make myself 7, I'm an adult. I'm not really 7. I can pay attention, right? I can structure a practice, but I'm going to do it in such a way where I've already convinced you I'm another kid. So not only do you have to listen to me, but you're fun. You want to hang out. You want to do what I do. I'm the cool kid, right? Everybody follows the cool kid. Why are all these kids being idiots in school? Well, because the cool kid. And so everybody's following the cool kid. So be a cool kid. You know what I mean? Be a cool kid. And then they'll follow you. And then you can remind them, hey, by the way, I'm an adult. Oh, well, I already want to be like you. So now I'm also going to emulate these adult characteristics of paying attention, of quote unquote, Ian, giving my best to achieve what I actually want to achieve, which is the goal of doing a rainbow, or the goal of doing a Maradona, or the goal of winning, right? I want to win this game. Okay, let's go out and win this game, right? Hey, I want to do a rainbow. Cool, let's do a rainbow. We should probably also try to win, but that's a great goal to have. I think you should do it, you know? And so I think that's probably, Ismael is right, probably the coolest thing that I have the ability to do is to be a kid. But I'm also the guy running the session. So, you know, it's like, well, how do you do that? Well, let's just all have fun in a way where I'm still the adult. I'm still in charge. Nobody has any questions about that. So I shouldn't question it either. I think a lot of times when people get in their own way and they try to control it, maybe they don't feel like they are in control. I know I'm in control. So I can just be a kid. At the end of the day, I know I'm in control, you know, and they're going to, you know, we're going to listen. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to have a ton of fun doing it. But I'm just a kid. One of my favorite, Ismael, you probably still have this video. One of my favorite videos, I go back and look at it every so often, is in the middle of a session and they were trying some stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, watch this, zero gravity. And then I did the zero gravity. And then I just kicked the ball up high in the air. And we all looked at each other and took off running in different places. You know, it was me and three, 7 or 8 year olds. That's who was in the frame of the camera. And I took off running too, and with a big smile on my face. And it's like, I don't know, like it's just who I am. It's what I do. It's been successful for me. It's worked. It's progressed and developed a ton of kids that I've worked with. And it's just something that works with me, works for me. I know it's not for everybody. I know it doesn't work for everybody, but so far who I've worked with, I think it works for all the kids. You know, but if there's a kid that needs more serious and a kid that is more serious, cool. At the end of the day, I am an adult. I can do that too.
Let me ask this question then. So a coach told us that at the age of about 13, 14, that magical, once that golden age evolves beyond where the desire to always win and want to stomp their opponents, I normally call it after puberty, normally, hits. Before that, all they care about is appeasing the authority figures, making them happy and wanting to, if they're making them happy, and it's just a psychological side of the game, the psychological side of coaching. I think you did it very well by being a kid and praising them and building them up by, like you said, you're acting like them with the adult characteristics, which is critical for that development. I think you might have to go teach a master class course on this or give a TED talk on that, because I think you might be onto something with kids' sports.
Your elementary school, your kindergarten teacher, right? Like these women, they're grown adult women that teach, and they're a kid in the class. And then, oh my God, and then we're going to do this. And let's, ready everyone, let's count. One, two, like they're another kid in the classroom.
Right.
Like, so it's not some foreign science. Right? I'm also applying it in sport.
But I think that's the psychology side missing in this game, this beautiful game, is that looking at kids and how we're developing them in this country, we have little machines. We don't have free-form thinkers anymore. We have kids that get upset if they miss a shot. I don't know how many times I watch in a tournament when my son played, like he was disappointed they didn't advance to the semifinals or the finals. But it is how many times these kids just put their hands on their face when they make a mistake and just live in the failure. It's
I hate it.
I don't know if that's coming from the parents, the coaches that they've had in the past, because that's my big thing. It's like, you don't chase the club, you don't chase the symbols, you chase the coach. The coach makes the world of a difference. When I do my homework on a coach, I spend a lot of time asking other coaches. We go watch them coach before we even try out. We try to pull up their schedule and go in, watch them, how they interact with the kids during games. And it's funny that we found a cluster of coaches here in the Metroplex that all coach the same way. It's funny watching them, because they get frustrated with the kids like parents. Then 2 seconds later, they have their arms around making jokes with them like nothing ever happened. And I think that is the magic sauce with coaches, is that they get more out of them when they do that. You emulated it so well. And that, I think we gotten off topic of the whole struggle side of this, but
now I'll bring us back. I'll bring us back to the other. So I mentioned, you know, I fell in love with the ball and I spent a lot of time with it. And when I tell you, I spent a lot of time with it, dude, when I was 10 years old, YouTube came out and all the Nike Joga Bonitos came out and all the, you know, Ronaldinho was coming up. I mean, man, I had a, I wanted to learn, what else can I do with this toy? What else? It was like a Christmas present that kept on giving, because it was a new present every day, because there was something new to do with it every day. You know, juggle to 5, juggle to 6, juggle to 10, juggle to 20. You know, it's like the same thing, but there's new levels. It's like a video game with levels that never ends, you know? And the moment you finally get, you know, you beat Bowser and Mario and it's like, yay, I won the game. The new game just came out. Let me go get it. You know, what's new this time? And I think I developed a mindset of curiosity of, what else can I do? What new way can I do the same thing? How much better can I get? You know, and all these things. And as you hear my passion and my joy and my interest in the soccer ball, as I'm talking about it, have I mentioned anything having to do with the sport? No, I haven't. You know, and that's why I always say, the love for the game will help you endure the sport. But the game is interpreted so many different ways. You have to allow the child and the kid and the player to interpret it their way, because that's what's going to make them them. There are so many different personalities, thought processes, styles of play. How are we going to say, no, it's like this? Well, if somebody would have told Ronaldinho, Neymar, Messi, no, the game is played like this, we wouldn't have these players. And I'm not saying I was Ronaldinho. I'm not saying that, you know, these players just come out of the woodworks every year, because they don't. They're very special. But I promise you, almost every other guy on the field can do what Ronaldinho is doing, just maybe not at that level. But he can juggle. He can do it around the world. He can juggle. He put the ball, balance it on his head. He catch it on his neck. Every high-level player can do that. People see what I do. Oh, that's crazy. Yes, I'm a little bit better than most. But I promise, when I was on a pro pitch, everybody could juggle. Everybody could catch the ball at the knees, catch the ball on their neck, balance the ball on their head. These aren't crazy foreign things, right? But they are things that you do because you're curious enough, and because nobody said, no, pass. Oh, I just need to pass. No, you don't. Keep the ball, man. Keep the ball at your feet. Go discover what new way you can dribble, what new way you can pop it up, what new way. Maybe the game on Sunday isn't the best way and time and space to do it. That's fine, right? But are we allowing that space and that freedom to the kid at home? Or are we turning into coach dad and, hey, you missed 5 passes on Sunday, so let's go outside and work on your passing. He doesn't want to work on his passing, dude. He wants to try to balance the ball on his forehead. That's what he wants to do. Let him do it. Let him do it. You know what I mean? He wants to sit outside and hit bangers, and then fine, make it, instead of hitting bangers into a net that then he's got to spin 15 yards walking and getting it back, build him a wall. Guess what the ball's going to do after he hits it? It's going to come right back. He's going to learn how to control the ball with it coming right back after hitting a banger. You know, like, there's so many ways that we miss to allow the kid to be the kid while still gaining skills and talents and new ways to do things. Like, we have to allow the kid to be a kid. We have to allow the kid to fall in love with the ball his way, because that's what will allow him to be him when there's a coach yelling, when winning is on the line, when it does matter, when there are fans, when there's people screaming on the sideline. That's the sport. When he's being pressed, when he's not being pressed, should I pass? Should I dribble? I don't know. That's all stuff that takes the sport. But the game is the game, and we have to allow them to play the game however they feel fit. You know, and then structure it a certain way. Like, if you're trying to teach a 7-year-old how to play Monopoly, you don't read them the rule book. You start playing, and then you remind them of certain rules, or you tweak the rules. We'll play it right when you're 9, right? Or we'll learn to play it right the next time. Let's just get these little rules down and play and have fun. And then after we do that 5-10 times, okay, hey, by the way, there's this new rule that I didn't tell you about that we can introduce. And now he thinks the new rule's fun. Oh, the game changed. Well, that's crazy. I thought we were playing it right the whole time. No, there's actually this new card. It's actually a draw 4. It's crazy, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just go all into the sport. The sport, actually, I'm going to say a real controversial thing right now. The sport sucks. I don't even like it. I like the game. the games that are played within the sport, the little 2v1s, the 1v1s, the me going at the center back who's talking mess the entire time. And now that's a little game within the game. The, am I going to have a good touch? Am I going to have a bad touch? Am I moving into the right space? Am I not? That all these are little games. They're all little games that we're playing within the sport. I love the games. I could give two craps about the sport, man. Honestly. And the sport has given me a lot. And I have worked my butt off. And I've given everything I have to the sport. I've signed pro contracts. I didn't nearly make it to the level that I wish I could have and wanted to. And that's because of, like I mentioned, certain pride issues and just other things, injuries, whatever. You fill in the blank. At the end of the day, there are excuses. I should have given more. And I understand that. But at the end of the day, the sport, it's really not that cool, man. It's like a prison. You know, it really is. Cavani talks about it. Cavani, bro, amazing career. Now he's finishing his career at one of the greatest clubs in the world, Boca Juniors. And he has mentioned multiple times, he's played in like, what, 4 or 5 World Cups? He's mentioned multiple times in multiple interviews that he's a prisoner to the sport. It can be very rewarding. It can. If you make it big, it is extremely rewarding. It'll change generations in your family. And people should pursue that because that's really where great change happens. But if you lose yourself on the pursuit and you don't make it, now you're no one. And you lost yourself. I did that. That's why I mentioned I had a 2-year gap where I didn't play. And it wasn't until, you know, God kind of pulled me out of that and reminded me, hey, look, dude, all that pursuit and everything is fine, but I've given you these gifts and talents that don't just go away if you're not a millionaire. You still have them. You can still have fun. You can still use them. You can still make a difference. But it's pro or nothing, right? Like, that's everything. Like, I'm going to go pro or nothing. It's like you don't get a college scholarship. You don't play again until you're in the over 35 league. You literally didn't play or touch a ball for 15 years because you didn't go to the level you thought you should or wanted to.
Pressure from parents, because I really like what you said. We have to understand the interpretation of the game our kids have, but they play by the pressure that we put on them. I'm paraphrasing it because I butchered what you said, but I think you hit something there. Do you think the pressure is translated from the parents then to the kids to meet these criterias, and then they didn't fall out of the love of the ball? When you did your interview with the Footy Pod, you talked very heavily about the love of the game versus the love of the ball. And I talked to Landon about this for weeks, and we got in arguments about like who loves the game and who loves the ball.
Yeah.
Because you can love both, but right. Where do you,
and this time I'm saying game versus sport, but it's the same concept.
Right. Same game, same concept. It is how do you balance the two? And I think you're onto something here talking about it. It's your love.
Check this out. Did you get married because you thought about marriage, or did you get married because you fell in love with your girlfriend who then became your wife?
I fell in love.
With who? With your wife?
My wife.
Yeah. She wasn't your wife yet.
Wife, right. And that's the conversation him and I have. It's like who we talk about big name players, like not trying to say Messi or Ronaldo's better than each other. They both have their pros and cons as players. They both are goats in their own way. I have my opinion and you may have yours, but it's like, who, what did they fall in love with? Did they fall in love with the game or the ball? And him and I will have this whole debate about this for a long time because of that.
Yeah.
And why are they so good? And that's like, we talk about the fame side. Is that the game or is that the ball? If fame is the game, then the ball doesn't matter anymore. And it's like, where do you stand? It's like, what do you want? And we talk about the love of the ball versus love of the game. You can be 50-50. And that means, in my mind, you're Messi. Messi wants to make the game better here in the United States. That means he loves the game, but he also loves the ball because he's able to play at his high level still and share his love.
Yeah.
Where I felt like Ronaldo went the opposite direction, but they're both ballers on their own spectrum. I'm not going to say one's better than the other because
I won't either, by the way.
We will be here all night arguing that. And it is the love of the ball or the love of the game. And that's what we talk about. It's like, what do you love more? Do you love playing the game or do you love tinkering with that ball on the sideline. And he can't give me an answer what he wants yet. We talk about it today on the way to practice. Like, what do you want to do? He goes, I want to do both. I'm like, okay, then we'll continue down this path. Yeah. And I then think
then allow that, right?
Right. And that's the thing. It's like he has a say in everything he does. And I think parents, and how do you advise parents then when they hit this crossroad? Like,
how do we continue to put the kid in a position to develop knowing, and actually this is a scary thing, not knowing if eventually some click will take place where I'm going to do this full time. I'm going to win because I understand that winning is a big part of it. But, you know, that may or may not come. What we have to focus on is my kid getting better technically? Technically, that's it. The game is 11 technical players then playing in some type of tactical instruction from a coach. That's all the game is. It's 11 technical players playing within the tactical instruction that the coach gives. Another thing that I like to say and that I believe is true is personality. I always say this: technical ability should not dictate position. Technical ability should not dictate position. Technical ability should be a given. Everyone should have it. I'm talking at a high level, right? I'm not talking about you now. So if everybody's technical, Well, he's more technical. So, well, he's a better shooter. No, dude, everybody, you can't sit here and tell me Van Dyke can't bend it in at practice, upper 90, 8 out of 10. He can too. And he's a center back, right? Like anybody, these guys are extremely, extremely technical. Okay, well then, so what dictates position? I'll tell you, personality. Some kids love getting stuck in, man. Other kids jump out of the way. That's okay. Because most of the time, if you have a number 10 or a number 8 on your back, you kind of jump out of the way. If you like getting stuck in, hey, dude, I got a position right for you, dude, if you like it. Well, I also like to have the ball. Cool. Well, eventually you'll get to a position where center backs actually get the ball a lot in possession, right? Like, or you become a forward who gets stuck in like Suarez, like Haaland, right? Like, and so all these qualities and characteristics, like, yes, eventually there's a technical separator, you know, of some sort, but personality dictates position, not technical ability. If I'm guided to play a 9-year-old in a position based on his technical ability, I am basically saying, hey, I'm not good enough to make you better, so I'm going to stick you over there.
So that being said, even at all levels, I think this happens in all age groups. Do you think that coaches play with the players they have at the time, hoping they get the players they need so they can provide that position? Probably say U12 and up, U13. Okay. So I listened to a podcast. I'll list them all. I talked to them all that I list. Greg Giles, the soccer specialist. He had a player. He goes, give me 2 years. I need to find someone that can fill your spot because you're the only one that plays that well. Give me 2 years. And within a year, he found a player so she could move up to midfield and be relieved from defense. And then she was able to go move up to go play a wing position and be very, very successful as a forward. But he had to have someone fill that role until they found the right person to replace her. Do you think that players get stuck and then they just get pigeonholed into a position because that's where they've always played?
I'll say this, Ian. Just to kind of answer, but at the same time not answer because it's vague. And I think the analogy or whatever, my wife hates my analogies. And to be honest, some of them are good, some of them are not. The science may be perfect, but the environment is not.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yes.
So the science of development, the science of what I mentioned earlier, technical personality, all that stuff. To be honest, and I can debate somebody and learn something new. I'm totally fine with that. But I firmly believe that to be true. So, but the environment isn't as true or as perfect as that. The environment, you're on a team. Well, you have to have a position. You get stuck in a position. Like, yeah, that stuff happens. Can you fix it? not in every environment. That's an environmental issue. That's right. Not a development issue, right? And so what I would say is, are you continuing to develop technical ability, right? Because at the end of the day, even if this guy dictates where you're going to play for the next 2 years, the math is nowhere even close in the amount of hours you're with him and the amount of hours you could be somewhere else with a ball.
I like that. So, no.
So
let me also add that what you were saying about the coach expecting to have a technical key that can play the game that they want. There is also, and Dave, and this, I think that you and I have talked about this a lot. I think that sometimes we parents do not understand that, you know, a kid with a couple hours a week playing, even if it is for 5 years, will develop the same way that a kid that is playing at least 2 or 3 hours a day. And there's just so much that you can do on a practice when you practice with your team that is a 1.5 hour, 2 hour stops practice, probably 3-4 days a week, that it probably has other goals. It's more a team-oriented practice, a more tactical practice. I'm not saying that the kids are not gonna technically develop there, but if you compare, for example, with the work that Dave does with his kids, are two different stuff. And I think that they complement each other very well. And when you see that on a pitch, when you see that there is a kid that it's in a different level on a technical perspective, it's because that kid probably is putting a lot of hours per week into developing those technical skills. You have mentioned a couple times that, you know, 13, 14 years old of age, where it's the breakthrough for them, right? So that's where I will say that probably sometimes we are rushing too much into kids playing a competitive game at a U10. And I was talking to you about, you know, to me, it's still hard to believe that the U11 kids are already starting to commit for a year for a team rather than commit to a technical development. So when they get to the 13, 14 years old, then is when you will say they're ready now to play the sports. While we are trying to push U10, U11 kids to play the sports rather than play the game, to love the game. So I think that's probably part of the thing that I can see on what Dave has taught us. There are other academies that are also that have that philosophy. We learn it from Dave. Dave has been the one that has shown us that way. And I do believe that, as you are saying, we parents do mess it up a lot for our kids sometimes. And sometimes it's not because we are bad. We have passion for our kids. And that's something that we sometimes do not accept. I mean, there's people, as you are saying, you probably do not have a background about soccer, but you have passion for what your kid is doing.
Yes, I think sometimes our passion overrides logic. And when I coached for about a year and a half, and I was going through my grassroots, I was getting ready to go to my D license, and I lost my team. And the big thing we talked about with our parents, and it was the constant message, we never know when the kernel will pop. It could be this month, it could be 3 years from now, it could all click. And then I was talking with a local coach here, and he told me there's three things with soccer. There's physical speed, there's technical speed, and there's mental speed. The only one in the United States that we see, especially at a young age, is the physical speed. Who can run the fastest and who can put the bangers in as quickly as possible? Kick that long ball, punt the ball, And that's what you hear parents yell on the sideline. As you get to more, I call it the refined levels of soccer, you hear the parents start talking about the 1-2s, look for the 1-2 or whatever it may be, more of the tactical and technical side of the game. And I really believe, like, as parents, I'm guilty of this. I sometimes forget that the tactical and technical side, when he's not hustling on the pitch, is maybe that he's thinking through the process, like you're saying, is we aren't seeing it. Like, we have this expectation of him, but he's thinking through the technical side of the game, and we're seeing it through our perspective, the high pressure, the high for the sport and not the love. And I think I could talk all day. I could hear you talk all day about that, because I feel guilty over some of my actions as a parent right now because of what you said.
We all are. Don't think that because I'm trying to talk to you about this stuff and because I'm in front of Dave that I'm not guilty about that too. So
I'll be guilty of it too when my kids start playing.
Yeah,
it'll happen even to me. Nothing's perfect. You know that. Like I said, the science is perfect, but the environments are not. There's no perfect environment except, you want to throw out La Masia and Ajax Academy. Okay, maybe we could argue those. But even within that, I'm sure there's stuff that isn't perfect, you know, or every single player would make it out. And the reality is not every player makes it out. A lot from those academies do, but not everyone. So it's still not, you know, so it's all good, man.
Hello, and I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Sitting down with David and Ismael was wonderful for me as a parent, as a father, as a husband, as a parent. Now, I did have 3 hours of conversation with these two. And let me tell you, as someone that doesn't like to give up time with my family, and I know they gave up time with their family, I was very grateful for this. Now, there is another part coming, and it's a little bit more in depth and also, and it shares so much more information that David had to share with me. And same with Ismael. They both were great guests to come on and talk and share their insights of this game. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you guys did, give me stars, give me a review, give me some type of love, we can say, for my episode. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.